Welcome to the Two Writing Teachers podcast. Two Writing Teachers is a meeting place for a world of reflective writers. Here on the podcast, we're excited to talk about ways to create, lead, and sustain joyful and productive writing workshops. My name is Stacey Schubitz, and I'm here with my colleague, Melanie Meehan. Let's work together to inspire and empower students to be competent, brave, and confident writers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Two Writing Teachers podcast. I am Melanie Meehan, and we have a couple of important announcements before today's podcast. Thank you, first of all, to everyone for the enthusiastic response we've had since the launch on September 1st. While Amy, Stacy, and I were excited to host this podcast as a team of three, we've discovered how much time recording can take and how challenging time zone differences can be. Therefore, we have made the decision to continue the podcast with Stacy and me as co-hosts since we are in the same time zone. We are happy that Amy Ellerman will continue to contribute regularly to the Two Writing Teachers blog and as a guest on the podcast. Additionally, beginning on November 6th, we will post a new episode only on Sundays, regardless of whether it is a tip for tomorrow or a digging deeper dialogue. And now on to today's podcast, which is all about mentor text. Welcome, Stacy.
Thank you. You know that this is my passion. It has been like my passion since graduate school, like back in the early aughts. So I'm very excited that we're going to dedicate an entire episode to it today. Before we get started, I really think it's important for us to talk about something that I cannot even believe in 2022 we need to talk about. But I need to say something about censorship and about banned books, because I know that many teachers are dealing with books being banned in their districts. New titles are going to be coming out in this episode. And before I share any of them, I just want to recognize the fact that I know what's happening. I see you. And by you, I mean the teachers who are having books confiscated from their classroom libraries, who are literally having to close down their classroom libraries, getting questioned from parents about specific books. I see that and I see you. I am not personally living the struggle, but I understand the struggle. So as we talk today about books, I just want you to know there are things that you're going to need to check out on your own. There may be things you have to run by your district. And again, I cannot believe that as trained educators who are knowledgeable about books, that this is even happening, but it is. This is where we are. And for those of you who are feeling frustrated, we are going in the show notes to link to people and organizations who are doing really important work.
Really important work. Yeah.
Yep. There's, and I'm just going to list them out right now. It's the Florida Freedom to Read Project, the Freedom to Read Foundation, PEN America, Taslin Magnusson. I hope I pronounced her last name right. Kelly Jensen and Jonathan Friedman. So those are people who, and organizations you should follow. Also the American Library Association is leading the way on this as well. I don't want to go much further with that, but I really needed to start with that because I think that this is where we are at this moment in time.
It really is just an unbelievable statement that I feel like we have to make at the beginning of our conversation about mentor text. That I have so many emotions about it and none of them are great. So,
yeah. I mean, I've been presenting on it for 15 years and it's not until now, maybe starting late 2020, that I even had to talk like this.
Yeah.
About books.
So let's take a breath and let's get into mentor texts with that be all of that being said, really, really important statements about what people are going through. But let's talk about what a mentor text is and how we see that.
Sure. A mentor text is basically a familiar book. It could be a picture book, a trade book. It could also be an essay. It could be any type of article. There are so many different forms for mentor text, but basically it is something that is familiar to students that teachers refer to in order to show kids examples or strategies that they can use in their own writing. It's how to do things. And in addition, it's really important to say that mentor texts don't have to be published texts. Often when I talk about mentor texts, I am talking about articles, essays, letters, short stories, picture books, chapter books. But they don't have to be published in order to be useful. Mentor texts can be student written. They can also be teacher written. And this is also useful to help kids lift the level of their writing.
I feel like you've like given that definition a few times before, Stacey. Yeah. I do want to, for the sake of clarification, clarify the difference between mentor text, demonstration text, and exemplar text. So as you're talking about student written texts and talking about teacher written texts, for me, there are differences between.
There are. And I don't feel like I necessarily talk about those differences in a way that's as meaningful as you do. So I'm glad that you brought that up. I feel like an exemplar text is that student written mentor text. It is something that we can show and highlight. And you can tell me if you're using these terms in different ways.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I think an additional way to think about an exemplar text is that it's one that really shows the standards that you're looking for, the learning targets that you're looking for within a unit. And sometimes a really beautiful mentor text might do that and then do other things too. You can pull parts of a mentor text that can inspire, but it doesn't have to be that whole entire piece that a student's reaching for with a
absolutely
mentor.
Absolutely. And often that child can't reach for the whole thing, and that's why we're giving them something to reach towards, but only part of that by pulling out a specific skill that we want them to read with those eyes of that skill when they're looking at that text. And then I feel as though demonstration texts in my world are those teacher written mentor texts. And those are expressly for the purpose of lifting the level of student writing. Sometimes a teacher has multiple demonstration texts that are written at different levels so that they can hand the same type of text to a student, but it is meeting the student where they are and then trying to push them a little bit higher.
Yeah, I don't want to say that a demonstration text is contrived, but it is almost contrived. It's like strategic.
Like very.
Sometimes I will write a demonstration text specifically leaving out something that so that students have an opportunity to put that something in that I'm working on. So it's a different kind of a text to put in front of kids that isn't necessarily for inspiration, but it's more for practice.
Yeah, agreed. And I think in the olden days, I did not use demonstration texts like that. But over time, as I learned what the purpose is and how they could be more strategic, I found myself creating different texts with different purposes and doing more of what you're saying. But in the, you know, beginning of me writing alongside my students, there was just one text and I was hoping that they could just all learn from that one text. And, you know, over time, I think I realized that that was not realistic.
Stacey, for people who are looking for mentor texts, where would you suggest that they start? I mean, there are millions of books and they all offer all kinds of different craft moves. How do you even get started with having a collection of mentor texts that are your go-tos?
Books like Craft Moves are, you know, great. That's very self-promoting of me, but, you know, that will hand you titles.
I'll promote it for you. Books like Craft Moves are great. So if you haven't seen Stacey's book about Craft Moves, that is one that you really ought to have in your hands because she's basically handing you a pile of books, 10 in each, 10 fiction and 10 nonfiction, if I'm not mistaken.
You are correct.
And a pile of lessons that you can use with each one of those books. So
They were written for small group, but they can be adapted to be one-to-one conferences and also full class mini lessons. Also, I want to mention Mentor Texts by Rose Capelli and Lynn Dorfman. They have three mentor textbooks. One is about fiction, and that's in its second edition. So it's been updated with newer texts. It just came out in the past year or so. They have one for nonfiction and poetry. They have incredible book lists in there.
Really incredible. Yeah.
They're extensive. And I mean, listen, I am very close friends with Lynn. I've now worked with her on both Welcome to Writing Workshop and Jump Into Writing. And we see each other, and I just call her and I'm like, listen, I need a book that does da da da. And she can like just randomly, without going to her bookshelf, just tick off names of books. So if you don't have those books, those are great ones as well. Blogs like To Writing Teachers are helpful because over the course of the past 15 years, we have extensive archives. If you look in the archives under mentor text, and I will link that in the show notes, you will be able to see everything that you would ever want to see about different types of mentor texts. The Nerdy Book Club, excellent place to go to learn about books. It may not say like, here are the craft moves that you can make from these books, but you're going to learn about lots of different books, different genres, authors, if you are a dedicated reader of the Nerdy Book Club. And then another place to go is John Shu's blog, Watch, Connect, Read. He always has interviews with authors and new releases. I mean, just a great resource. So those are places that I would suggest that people go to look for mentor texts.
I'd also say Shelley Harwain's book, Beyond the Writing Workshop, is an amazing resource. And she's constantly updating the online book lists because she's always going to the library and the bookstores and finding new books. So that's a great place also where they're very categorized and fun to find.
Amazing. Great.
But, you know, I guess from there, like, you know, we can read books and spot them. How do you get kids to look at mentor texts? Because, I mean, the whole goal of mentor texts, right, is to lift the level of kids' writing. They're almost like a silent teacher in the classroom, you know, or an additional teacher. And you want kids to recognize that power. And I think it's worth spending some time on how you get kids to recognize the power of mentor texts as teachers.
Absolutely. And I think that it's really important to realize that reading like a reader is what comes naturally. That's what we do in schools. And we teach kids how to read, and we teach them all of these skills that they need to decode and comprehend text. And that comes much more naturally. Teaching kids to read like a writer takes a lot of time and practice. There has to be a lot of explicit modeling for how to do this in the classroom, because if there's not, kids are not going to magically figure out how to do it on their own. They really are going to need to see the teacher doing it right in front of them so that they can do similar work when they are reading their own texts. And it's very possible to do it super well. May take years, like to go out and literally find them on your own. But I mean, I have had fourth graders who, after just a couple of months of writing workshop, will look at a book that they're reading and say, I can use this for da da da. I noticed da da da. And that's incredible because they are starting to understand how to read like a writer, and they are understanding the reciprocity of reading and writing.
Maybe the difference is, or the key thing to really have at the tip of your tongue and be thinking about is that you're reading like a reader or you're reading like a writer. Mm-hmm. And put that question out a lot. That was something that when I was getting my MFA in creative writing, our director talked about a lot. She was like, welcome to being a writer. You're never going to read without, for the just enjoyment of reading again, you're going to be constantly stopping and going, wait, how did the author do that?
Yes.
You have to kind of spy on yourself as a reader and recognize when you feel something or when there's been an impact on you within that text, and then have the wherewithal to stop and say, wait, that impacted me. How did the author do that? That's kind of what you want.
It's huge. And I was just reading Lessons in Chemistry, which is a novel.
Lessons in Chemistry.
Don't tell me how it ends. I am literally in the middle of it. And when I say I was just reading it, like I'm about 50% through it. So I actually am reading like three books at one time, but we won't talk about the insanity of that. But the very first page of Lessons in Chemistry, I screenshotted on my iPad because I thought that the lead was so compelling. It drew me right in. And I was like, I want to write like this. Mm-hmm. So I read for enjoyment every single night, probably from 1 to 2.5 hours before I go to bed every evening. I'm dead tired. But if I see something that really sparks me as a writer, I screenshot it, I save it as a Kindle quote, and I come back to it later and look at it. It's an illness, really, to keep doing this, isn't it?
I wouldn't call it an illness. No.
Okay.
But I would call it an awareness of text, that you are in a constant place of looking for what you admire and what you could do as a writer. And if you can get kids to do that, that's an amazing thing. I will say, you know, I have a... As a coach, I'm going into classrooms a lot, and I'm not there as a full-time teacher. And so that's an interesting place to be when I'm trying to get kids to use mentor text, because generally speaking, I want kids to be really familiar with the text before I start using it as a mentor. Like I would say, kids, first, I want you to read this book as a reader and know what happens and experience it. And a lot of the time I'm thinking about picture books when I'm saying that.
Sure.
You know, read it cover to cover and experience it and understand the characters and the plot and what happens in it before we start breaking down the words and the crafts that are in it. So I do think, you know, I would say that if you're a classroom teacher listening to this, I would say first do that. That being said, I have been using mentor text recently where I will pull just a passage out if it's a passage that I know will help a student within their own writing. So if it's a skill that I know that they need to work, I might pull a passage from a mentor text that could show how another author has done that to a child right there. And that has been effective even if the child hasn't seen and read and experienced the full book.
Absolutely. I mean, I really do prefer option A, where kids are knowing the text well, 100%, but sometimes option B is necessary. It's better to show them a passage that can help them than to show them nothing at all, because it's too often that I've seen that very well-meaning teachers will talk about how to do something better, but won't show an example. And that example is huge. Adults need to see how to do something to do it better. We need examples to kind of lead us on the way. So I think option B is better than option C, which is showing them nothing and just telling them what to do. That never produces great results.
Yeah. It's like, you want to notice it, right? Mm-hmm. That's the first step. Then note it and really break it down. Like, okay, I've noticed it. I'm noting it. How did that author do it? And then have a go at it.
And I'm going to throw one more idea in there for the noticing and noting is also to name it. And I'm not talking saying show, don't tell. It could be a sentence that says what it is that is happening here. It doesn't need to be a kitschy, jargony phrase, because often kids don't really understand what that means, but really naming what it is so that it's replicable and noticeable in other texts.
Yeah. It's like making it visible to kids, right? It's that clarity. So,
yeah.
So I feel like that's like all mentor texts, almost 101.
It is.
what they are, where you can find them, how you can use them with kids, but within writing workshop and also bridging the gap between reading and writing, because let's just shout it out and state this, that there is a standard and an importance and a value to noticing craft as a reader.
Yes.
And if you are noticing that craft as a reader, it's almost the step before you're trying it out as a writer. So there's huge value in those reciprocal processes.
Mm-hmm. Before we move on, while we're doing the 101 on mentor text, I just want to shout out some new titles that I've come across that I think teachers might want to know about. And I'm going to list them pretty quickly. I'll list them in the show notes. So if you're driving, please don't pull over and write these down. They will be in the show notes for the episode. So the first,
if you have to write them down, then do pull over.
Don't, sure.
Yeah.
Don't do it while you're driving. Okay. So the first one is one that is going to be out about a week and a half after this episode goes live. And it's called Puffin by Martin Jenkins and Jenny Desmond. And my son and I read this together and he's now obsessed with Puffins. It's got the best voice and teaching tone that I've seen in a while. There are fact inserts in a different font, and then there's like these interjections throughout the text in different fonts, and there's great back matter on Puffins. And so we're now Puffin obsessed in our family. At dinner last night, I had to get out a tutorial and had to draw Puffins while our food was being made. The next one is different. It is not a picture book per se. It is, I don't know what you would call this. It's definitely not an easy reader. It's not a chapter book because it doesn't have chapters, but it's called Little Guides to Great Lives. And it's about Frida Kahlo. And there are several books in this series, and it is content area, like words are underlined. It's the story of Frida's life with quotes from her interspersed into it. And it's really interesting how the author does this. And in the back matter, there is more information about her life. There's a glossary, a timeline, and there are even translations. So if the reader does not speak Spanish, they can understand what the Spanish means. So I love that text. It's just gorgeous. Another one, because I love to cook in this house, is Bake, Make, and Learn to Cook Vegetarian. And this is a how-to writing book. It's going to be released on November 8th. So if you're listening before November 8th, pre-order it. It's a step-by-step nature of this book where every set of words matches these great pictures on how to cook different recipes. And it's so unique in terms of a cookbook. And I really can see this being utilized in the classroom with primary writers who are doing this step-by-step writing and need a mentor text to look at. I've got two more and then we're going to move on. Hannah's Hundreds of Hijabs really plays with a variety of punctuation. It's so much fun to see the punctuation in this book. There's everything from ellipses to dashes, and the dashes are used for everything from compound adjectives to offset information. There are speech bubbles rather than traditional dialogue, which is just, I think, really useful for some young writers who are still
really fun to see. Yeah.
Yeah. Who are writing longer, but maybe you're having trouble with dialogue. Then, okay, if they're still doing pictures at the top of their paper,
here's a way to do it. Yeah.
Here's a way to do it. And then Only the Best, The Exceptional Life and Fashion of Anne Lowe, is a biography that came out in October. And it is just such a beautiful biography of this woman who was a fashion designer. She started out as a seamstress, and it just moves through the chronology of her life so seamlessly. And it includes such variety in the details that are used. It's just a gorgeous book, and there's such rich back matter as well. And I think that when we can teach kids how to separate the story part of retelling someone's life with like all these other cool facts that you might want to share about them, and then put it as like back matter in their own writing, I think that that's useful. And there's also obviously a bibliography, which kids can use if they need to note it.
Like,
so those are just a few.
Yeah. Like maybe we should have had a disclaimer at the beginning of the podcast. Like, watch out. This one might cost you money. Look out. You're going to learn.
Yeah. There are a couple of long-term blog readers who will often leave comments on posts saying you're doing it to my wallet again. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Stacey, I'm going to give you a compliment.
Okay.
You ready to hear it?
I am.
I sometimes do that with kids when I'm conferring with them. I'm going to give you a compliment. You are one of the most creative users of mentor text. I feel like whenever I have conversations with you about mentor text, I come away with a new idea of how to use them. So I'm going to just give you that space in case you have any ideas that we haven't covered so far with mentor texts.
Sure. Thank you, first of all, for the compliment. I try to think in sometimes out of the box ways of how to use picture books, because as much as we want to teach kids craft moves, there are other ways that we can use picture books in the writing workshop. So I recently had two books that had been sitting side by side for a while, and they are A Person Can Be, and it's a very Spartan text, and I wasn't sure how it could be used in writing workshop because it basically has just a few words on each page. It's basically a book of opposites so that you understand that a person can be busy and bored, they can be homesick and adventurous, and there are these great illustrations that show what that means. And then there's this other book called What Are You? And it's basically this play date between dogs when they're trying to suss out like what their background is, what they are. And it's a book about identity. And, you know, it's kind of the dog version of the kid conversation about, you know, what are you? What religion are you? Where are you from? What's your race? And those are real conversations happening amongst kids. And you see the way that these dogs work it out. So I had this Spartan text, A Person Can Be, and I had this book about dogs, and I'm like, just keeping them together in my office for a couple of weeks. And then all of a sudden this book, What's Your Name, comes into my midst, and it's about naming people and like how names hold this power for us. And I was thinking as I was reading through this, and it's a rhyming text, which I don't often typically use, just like I don't typically use mentor texts with animals for kids. I don't typically use rhyming texts, but this one was really interesting because I shouldn't read it because I don't have permission to do it. But I'll just say that it really shows how like the same person in a family could share a name, but they're referred to in different ways, like Papa Hernando, Hernando, and Hernandito. It shows how someone's full name, like Alexandra, there might be three different people with that name in a classroom. One might be Allie, one might be Lexi, one might be Alex. Okay, and it goes on and on across the pages. And I was thinking like, well, that would be great instead of handing kids a name book when they are in writing workshop and saying like, oh, pick a name for your character if you can't think of one, like look through this baby name book. And I've never loved that, but that's always been like a go-to when kids are stuck. So then I was thinking about these three books together, and I was thinking about the fact that we always talk about that in reading, characters are complex. Just like people, characters are not one way. They are complex beings. So how does that translate into writing? We can create really complex characters in our writing. We can think deeply about their names. We can realize that we shouldn't write with stereotypes of all girls this, all boys that, like, and that's kind of jumping off of what are you? And then we can show how a person can be two different things at the same time, like sad and sorry, by using A Person Can Be. And I was thinking, you know, if a student isn't really catching on to the complexities of how to develop and create a character in their own writing, there can be, you know, a small group course of study on how to develop complex characters. And these three books can be used to really help kids understand that characters are three-dimensional. So
I love that. So it kind of extends that lesson where you're drawing a character, you're creating the traits of a character. Yeah.
Because often it's such important thing. It's as surface level work that kids are often doing. And if you know that students can go deeper, then like, let's push them a little further to go deeper. And that's another way to use mentor texts when thinking about the complexity of character.
Love that. As you were talking about it, I was also envisioning how it could be like a setting lesson, right? Where we frequently are teaching students to think about the setting and establishing the setting. I could see using a book or having a little collection like what you just said about books that really, really put a spotlight on the setting. I'm envisioning Windows, that picture book by trying to think of the author windows. It has the cover of houses with lights on. Julie Denos.
Okay. Another one might be Kiyoshi's Walk. And it's very detailed in terms of the setting. And if you took away the pictures in the picture book and closed your eyes, you would be able to envision it. And that's what we want good writing to do, is when those pictures aren't there, we want it to be very clear so that the child can, or the reader can make a movie in their mind. And kids can write like that. They just need exemplars of how to do it. So absolutely, you can create a little setting text set for kids.
Yeah, love that idea. I think one of the other things that teachers are really looking to do is maximizing minutes. And mm-hmm. one of the things that I know you do is you push people to have mentor texts for different content areas. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I think part of the reason that Craft Moves was written was because in the consulting work I was doing and in some of the adjunct work I was doing, teachers were just again and again saying, I don't know how to fit this in with everything else that I have to do. So I started looking for some mentor texts that could do double duty, sometimes triple. I don't love doing it triple, but you know, sometimes you have to do what you have to do. So we can use books in social studies, math, and science in very intentional, meaningful ways. Recent books that I might do this with, there's a book called Copycat. It's nature-inspired design around the world. It's a collection of Tonkas. So within our content area writing, we can infuse some poetry. And we want kids to demonstrate some understanding of the content area concepts. Well, let's teach them a simple poetic form or two or three so that they have some choice. And let them run wild with it and teach through poems. I think that there's a lot of craft that can be taught, and this is a great book for doing it. Similarly in math.
I have to just say, I want to just interrupt because what you're saying reminds me and aligns so much with the beautiful podcast that you did with Shonda, where she talks about chance, and it aligns to the idea that we can grasp concepts through rhyming and through chants and through other ways. It's such an important way of reaching some kids.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got to find different creative ways. And I think the person who really taught me to infuse poetry into the content areas was Lynn Dorfman. I cannot take credit for that myself. It's something that I know that she does a lot of in her work. And I have, you know, tried to pick up that baton and move it forward. In math, I recently saw this book called Counting in Dog Years and Other Sassy Math Poems. And of course, as a person who is not necessarily mathematically inclined, I was very curious. And it's a content area tie-in. And there are all these math concepts that are explained in this book from multiplication to fractions. And it can help kids find ways to explain concepts and hopefully develop a deeper understanding of the different mathematical concepts by writing a poem about it. And these aren't all Tonkas. They're all different sorts of poems in this book. And it's really a wonderful book. So I think I'll stop with suggesting books there, and we should probably move on before anyone dings us with a lower rating because we have emptied their pocketbooks. But the library is great. You've got to use the library. I think that's something that we need to be very mindful of, and really, you know, get there first to your local library, put that book on hold, and then borrow it for your students to use.
Yeah. So the last thing I want to just say and plug, and, you know, we might talk more about it in another time and place and space when we talk about agency, but I think that it is so important to give kids choice when it comes to mentor texts. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that I have done that is to create almost charts of the craft moves that exist within books. And it was funny because initially I started those craft moves as a teaching tool for me, mm-hmm. so that I could grab those books. And what I realized, you know, and disclaimer, I use a Sharpie and I put page numbers on picture books.
I'm not shocked. I do the same thing.
It's yeah, little teacher hack when those picture books don't have page numbers. What I discovered is that kids will access those. Mm-hmm. So I can actually make almost a desk of mentor text. And if those charts are there and I've got a savvy kid who's learned how to use mentor text, they can look at the chart and say, yes, I need to work on integrating speaking, inner thinking, and description within my own writing. And on page 27 of Birdsong,
whatever book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever book. It exists. I really like the cover of this one. The person on the cover of this one looks like me or looks like somebody that I like. And I can see how the author did that on this page. And that's a really cool thing to do in terms of pushing student agency and really giving authentic choice and being responsive to kids.
Yeah. And I often hear like, what if someone puts it in their desk or their backpack and takes it home? Let's cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah.
Let's not worry about that at the outset, because if we can talk about responsible ways to access and utilize classroom mentor text, kids rise to the occasion. They're not taking your books most of the time.
Yeah. So again, just incredible, incredible power in mentor text and putting books in kids' hands and teaching them not only to read them, but to appreciate them, notice, note and name those moves and send kids off to really become powerful writers in response to the books that they're reading.
Absolutely.
Stacy, thank you so much. This has been an amazing podcast to listen to you talk about different books. I know that you're like, oh, I'm costing people money and putting out suggestions, but it is just, it's such an important conversation. And I really appreciate you and the passion that you have for books.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Two Writing Teachers podcast. Check out the show notes for links to the items we mentioned in this episode, as well as ways to connect with us. For more about the teaching of writing, head over to the Two Writing Teachers blog at twowritingteachers.org. If you liked what you heard today, please share it with your friends and colleagues, post about it on social media, like, subscribe, and leave us ratings and reviews. Our music is by Lemon Music Studio. If you'd like to connect with us, email us at contact@twowritingteachers.org. Thanks again for listening. Let's teach, learn, and write on together.